J.J. Cooper, Carlos Collazo, joining you for another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. And today we are talking about Guardians number one prospect, second baseman Travis Bezzana, the number one pick in the 2024 draft, who's coming off of a 2025 season where we got to see little hints of it. But Carlos, is the best still yet to come? I say that because obviously Bezzana had an oblique injury last year that did kind of sideline him at times. Was a solid season, but if you're a Guardians fan, you may be saying, hey, you know, look at what J.J. Weatherholt's doing. Hey, look at what Nix Kurtz is doing. There's been other college bats from that class who have already kind of either made it to the big leagues or are right knocking on the door. Bezzana's not there, but maybe he's not that far behind that?
Yeah, I think the best is definitely yet to come for Bezzana. Nothing about his 2025 season has diminished how I view him. As a prospect, I think the strengths that made him the first overall pick in that 2024 draft, which the Guardians lucked into by winning that draft lottery and getting a top of the class talent while not being one of the worst teams in baseball, which is just fun to see. But like you said, he was limited this year or in 2025 with an oblique injury. He played just 84 games. I think if you look at the surface level stat numbers in both AA and AAA, you can maybe say, okay, what are we getting here? He was the first overall pick. We have big expectations. But I think if you dig a little deeper and you look at the underlying batted ball data and just the arc of his season, I'm still very confident that this is one of the best pure hitting prospects in the minor leagues. We have very big offensive grades on Bezzana even still. I think with a fully healthy season, you'll see that reflected more in his performance numbers. He still makes contact at an exceptional rate. He understands the strike zone. He has a lot of power that he can get to the pull side. And I think as well, he showed some impressive adjustments in the second half of the season that just give me confidence in his aptitude and his ability to adjust to a pro game and pro pitching. In particular, Bezzana is not a player who has had to face a lot of high quality left-handed pitchers who are capable of landing secondaries in the zone. That's a very niche and granular pitch type to maybe bear down on. But I do think you saw him make some adjustments to that specific kind of pitching. And it just gives me confidence that the Bezzana is still the sort of natural hitter we expected him to be.
What about on the defensive side? What did you see? Like, obviously we had seen him multiple years at Oregon State. Fascinating background. Comes from Australia, becomes one of the best players in college baseball. But kind of the question, there has been a question of what his ultimate kind of defensive ability is going to be at second base. What did we see in that first full season of pro ball?
Yeah, I think the defensive evaluation for him is largely the same. Like, he's never going to be an impact gold glove type defender. I think the Guardians were happy with him for just making the routine plays, being a reliable defender at second base. There are a lot of questions about the arm slot versatility that he showed or maybe didn't show in the college game. I think the arm slot versatility he showed in his first pro season has gotten better. Now, he's never going to have the biggest arm on the infield. I don't necessarily think he really needs a huge arm on the infield. He's a plus runner. He's going to have solid range. He's going to be able to get to a lot of baseballs. And I think the routine plays, he's going to make them. If you're relying on him to be a gold glove winner in the infield, you might be disappointed, but I think Travis Bezzana ultimately is a player that you can play at second base. You're not going to have any worries about it, and he's going to provide you a ton of thump in batting average and on base value in the lineup. Maybe an interesting like wild card scenario for Bezzana is the fact that I think he's a great athlete and enough of a runner where I would be curious to see him in the outfield. I don't know if the Guardians have plans to do that, but this has been something that's been kind of whispered about and talked about for Bezzana going back to his college days. Because he's not the most impact defender at second base, you look at what he can do well, and he is still a plus runner when healthy. Maybe there is a little bit more defensive upside in the outfield. So I think that potentially gives him some versatility when he gets to the major leagues. And if the Guardians need to shuffle their lineup in certain ways, they have no shortage of talented infielders in the system. But I would expect him to get every opportunity to win the full-time everyday second base job and be a rock solid defender at the position.
Along those lines, okay, what kind of timetable are we talking about now? Like you said, he has the opportunity to win it. Is it realistic to think that he could be on that opening day roster, or is it realistic to think that this is a mid-season call-up for the Guardians, or is there the possibility that he might need another full season in the minor leagues?
I would be surprised if he needed another full season in the minor leagues. We talked about some other players from his 24 class that are already kind of going off at the major league level. Bezzano was one of the most polished players in his draft class. He was an equivalent talent to JJ Weatherholt, like you said, who we're talking about as a top five prospect and should also be making his impact on the major leagues shortly. I mean, you look at the Guardians lineup and I think they could use some more offensive help in that lineup. Bezzano was drafted 1-1 overall for what he can do with the bat. Unless the Guardians are just being massively cautious and really want to make sure he crushes AA and AAA before he gets to the majors, it would be surprising to me if he doesn't get an opportunity in 2026. Whether or not he wins that job directly out of spring training is anyone's guess, but I also think there have been some players who've come through that position who really haven't taken a grip of it and said, okay, this is my job. Like, it feels like a little bit of an open competition still for someone to lock down that role, and I would imagine Bezzano is the favorite to do that.
We've seen, like, with Bezzano, you know, you talk about the offensive impact he could make. The other guy who was kind of the closest to him on this Guardians list is also in our top 100, is Chase DeLauter. I kind of look at where this team is right now, and you've said, like, this is a team that could use a little bit of an offensive boost. The combination of DeLauter and Bezzano both arriving at some point in 2026 might provide a little bit of that thump that maybe has been lacking there in Cleveland in the last couple of years. Like, how significant could this rookie class be? And I you have to throw Parker Messick in that as well.
Yeah, and Parker Messick, maybe the least regarded of all these, but had a tremendous impact on the major league team a year ago. It really helped catapult them to the postseason. We saw Chase DeLauter make his MLB debut in the postseason. That was just unique to see. But I do think both DeLauter and Travis Bezzano, if they're healthy, and for DeLauter, that's a bigger if than for Bezzano, and really for a lot of the players in the Guardian system, having good health will be key for 2026 because they just had a lot of players that dealt with injuries. But every time Chase DeLauter has been on a baseball field, dating back to his time in college at James Madison, he has annihilated the baseball. He doesn't swing and miss. He gets on base a ton. He has really loud offensive tools, and it's just a matter of, okay, can you stay healthy and can you get on the field? If Chase DeLauter did not have these injury questions that have really lingered with him dating back to his college days, I think he would be the top overall prospect in the system. There is just a tier of power that DeLauter can access that I think is a little bit more exciting than what Bezzano can bring to the table. But that said, we have above average or plus grades for both these players in the hit power department. They're two of the more exciting left-handed hitting prospects in the game. And so I think if they're both going to be healthy and on the major league roster, I'm kind of sneakily excited to see like what this lineup can really look like. Cause I'm not sure if people are sleeping on their offensive upside just because we haven't seen it or forgotten about their prospect status because they've dealt with some injuries, but I'm still pretty bullish on both these offensive players.
I will kind of end it with this. Like, we got, and I think you also got a nice blend here because I think DeLauter is probably a little bit of power over hit and Bezzano is a little bit of hit over power. But both of them, when you say that, you don't really want to take too much away from the other aspect, right? These are both guys who could give you a contribution both ways.
Yeah, I think so. It's not a case where one of these players is a 60 hitter with 40 power and one is a 40 hitter with 70 raw power. We've got above average or plus grades for both of them in both departments. It seems like DeLauter shades a little bit more towards power and Bezzano a little bit in the inverse. If they both wound up with 55s for both, I think you're still looking at a really great outcome. And for Bezzano in particular, what's always been a trait that separates him is just his ability to get the ball in the air to his pull side has always been a strength. We saw him get away from that a little bit in the first half of the season in 2025. And then in the second half, there were some nice mechanical adjustments he did, particularly with the lower half of his move that I think helped him get back to that. So yeah, these are definitely not players who are going to have empty batting average or empty slug categories.
Well, that is our prospect profile on Cleveland Guardians number one prospect, Travis Bezzano. For more of these prospect profiles, please check out the Baseball America YouTube channel. We're releasing one of these every day during spring training. And don't miss the next episode of the Hot Sheet Show, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles, where we are taking a look at the number one prospect in each and every MLB organization. Today, we are looking at the White Sox number one prospect, left-hander Noah Schultz, the big lefty. And you can see it on the graphic there if you're watching on the video. The lefty who is, he keeps seeming to grow. He's 6'10", bumping up maybe, you know, someday at 6'11". The long-levered lefty, Noah Schultz, who had a kind of breakout 2024 and then 25. If you just look at the stats, you may come away a little disappointed. You could kind of say, oh, he's taken a big step back, but there was some kind of explanations for that. He was stretched out. He did show he worked more innings. He worked deeper into games than he ever had before. He also did battle a little bit of a knee injury, patella tendonitis that kind of flared up. So Jeff, like where we look at Noah Schultz now compared to where he was a year ago, has it changed a lot for you, or is it still kind of a pretty similar state even after a little bit more of an up and down, or maybe let's even say more downs than ups 2025 season?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a battle kind of going on with Noah Schultz's prospect status that I think, you know, is a little bit of perception versus reality. And I think maybe the perception was a little inflated coming out of 24 based on some of the numbers, when this was a guy that had never seen the fifth inning, even dating back to his time in high school. He just never pitched very deep into games. And we talk about this a lot in a lot of these prospect breakouts, but you know, you need to get innings. And I think that's one thing we see from guys that go to college is pitching a lot of innings, having to pitch in situations where you're trying to win the game. It's not a minor league game where there's maybe 500 folks in the stands that actually care whether you win or lose that game on a given night. And I think, you know, this year we did see from a positive standpoint, we did see, as you mentioned, Schultz go a little bit deeper, go into the fifth inning, have a few good starts. At times it looked pretty good at AA Birmingham. Once he was promoted to Charlotte, he really struggled. I think that there's a few things at play with Schultz. I think that it is long levers, you know, an unusual body. He's very big for a baseball player, one of the biggest guys in professional baseball in terms of height at the moment. So that's always going to take a little longer. I think we've seen that historically, that bigger, taller pitchers, especially once you get above 6'6", it takes a little bit longer for those guys to kind of find their mechanics and get themselves synced up, et cetera. Some of that's at play. He also has a 5-pitch mix with 3 pitches in particular in terms of his primary mix, in terms of his sinker, his sweeper, and his changeup that have significant movement. I mean, we're talking about 16 inches to 13, 12 inches, the spread on those pitches in terms of glove side and arm side run. So really plays the East-West game really well. There's velocity there. There's interesting movement patterns. There's interesting release traits. There's a lot to like, but I think at the same time, we have to take a step back and recognize that, some of the strike throwing, getting the ball in zone consistently, even how minor league hitters react to pitches that move that much, especially in AAA where they had the benefit of the challenge system. More often than not, a lot of those big moving pitches can be takes. So I think he's battling a few different things here. I don't know if they're necessarily bad from a long-term perspective or not, JJ. But I do think that the perception of Schultz versus where he was last year to this year has certainly changed. I'm not sure that it's any different of a pitcher. I think it's just he was exposed to that second time through the order and was asked to go deeper into games and take on a more traditional starter role. And that exposed, you know, some of the sort of, limits of his skills at this point.
I am going to beg for some patience here. Like if you like Noah Schultz as a prospect, he's 22. And when I say he's 22, you could say, okay, 22, still young pitching prospect. He's 22 and he's 6'10". Like, this is a guy who actually has gotten a few, understandably, he's a 6'10 lefty. Like, you're going to get Randy Johnson comps. I just want to remind those of you who aren't as old as me what Randy Johnson's kind of career progression was. The year that Schultz just had, well, that year was Randy Johnson, when he was 21, that was his first year in the minors. He was in the New York Penn League, short season ball, and he walked 24 batters in 27 innings. You could say, okay, well, you need a little time to settle in. Okay, so what about that next year? This is going to be the age year that we're going to see from Schultz this year. He walked 94 batters in 120 innings. Okay, well, how about we go another 5 years later? Let's go to 1991. He was a 27-year-old in the Mariners rotation. 152 walks in 201 innings. Now, do remember, this is a guy who ended up having great control down the road, but it was really age 28, 29 before Randy Johnson figured out how to control these really long levers and really throw strikes. Noah Schultz is years away from that, and he's already showing some signs he can. There were some little steps back last year. But when you talk about you want pitchers to be unusual, there are few pitchers, Jeff, more unusual than what Noah Schultz could be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to sort of bring some numbers to back your point a little bit here on Schultz. I actually don't think the command is that bad. He had a 56.7% in zone rate on the sinker this year, which is really high. He had a 51.4% on the sweeper, which is pretty high. And once again, let's take into consideration that there is some element of an auto zone, even if it's through a challenge system that he was dealing with at AAA. He's in the zone a lot, and we can be pretty certain that he's in the zone that much because some of those numbers were on Hawkeye devices, which is how we judge balls and strikes in the modern age, right? He only had a 61.8% strike rate with that zone rate. Typically, somebody with a in zone rate that high is going to have a strike rate on their fastball closer to 68, 69%, which is a plus metric. Just to use it as a comparison point, J.R. Richey had a 66.1% strike rate on his sinker last year, and he had a 52.5% zone rate. So significantly lower, but a significantly higher strike rate. And I think that is some of the movement and guys honestly just staying off of it and not even swinging at it. And he's getting a lot more looking strikes and less whiffs than he should. So I wonder how that translates long-term. I really sort of look at Noah Schultz and break it down. And as you said, I think you really need to apply patience here. The season wasn't as bad as it might seem on its face.
We're asking for a little bit of patience. If you are saying that you think Noah Schultz, the prospect, is going to give you an immediate impact in 2026, and by the way, we might see him in the majors, we'd say maybe pump the brakes a little bit. There could be some adjustment period here. And by the way, I'll also say with that, when you see his numbers in Charlotte this year, don't get too alarmed. Charlotte is pretty much the, imagine if you took Coors Field and put it in the AAA International League. It is absolutely a hitter's park. But we do think in the long term, Schultz is one of the better pitching prospects in baseball. That is why he is the number one prospect in the Chicago White Sox farm system. And that is another of the Baseball America prospect profiles. For more of these prospect profiles, check out Baseball America's YouTube page. We are doing one of these every day during spring training, releasing them so that you could get your number one prospect for your team. And we're doing it for all 30 organizations. And by the way, make sure that you check us out also on our regular show every Tuesday, the live Hot Sheet Show, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. We look forward to seeing you then. Hello, here's JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, and we're doing another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles where we are looking at the number one prospect in each and every organization. Today, we're looking at the Detroit Tigers' number one prospect, Kevin McGonigal, the number two prospect in the game, and just simply as impressive a hitting prospect as we have seen in a very long time. We have updated our tools grade since that graphic. He is an 80 hitter now. As we thought, we looked at it, it's like, nope, that's an 80. We've done that now. Going back to 2012, we've done tools grades for our number one prospects in the prospect handbook for each organization. We've had three hitters who've had an 80 grade over that time. So we have Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who got it twice, turned into a pretty much a star. Wander Franco, who was on his way to being a stardom before the legal troubles that we all know about. And now Kevin McGonigal. That is our third 80 hitter since 2012. Jeff, what makes him an 8? Why is he a top of the scale hitting prospect?
Yeah, I think it's just the combination or the blend of all the different skills that he has at the plate. Elite bats of ball ability. It's a 13.8% in zone contact rate, 18.1% overall. That's well above plus or 60 territory when we talk about those metrics. Low chase rate, not a guy that swings outside the zone very often. It's a 20.3% chase rate. But his swing rate is actually very high. And what that leads to is he actually has a very high swing rate on pitches inside the zone. So I think when you talk about Kevin McGonigal and what makes him so unique, and we talk about that hit tool, it's foundationally he has plus or better skills and attributes that make up a hit tool. All those pieces are sort of cranked up to 6 to maybe even 7 or 8 in some categories. And while we like to think about the hit tool, you know, in a vacuum, very, very separate from all the other tools, power does impact the quality of your hitting. And there's a certain sort of threshold that you need to be over, just as like with a power hitter, you need to be over a certain threshold of contact to get to the power to hit those home runs. You can't whiff home runs or balls over the fence, of course. And it's kind of the same thing. McGonagall has surprisingly plus power and really, really good angles. You know, he is a smaller guy, has a lot of bat speed. But I think in addition to that, he also catches a lot of really clean barrels in terms of like an Alex Bregman or a Joey Votto or like Mookie Betts at his best. Is somebody that's able to, you know, backspin the ball off of the bat to their pull side and sort of hit those home runs to the shortest part of the park, which I think pushes up his power ceiling a little bit too, JJ. I don't know if you would disagree with that or not, but I think when we talk about the hit tool, it's not just the fact that he makes so much contact, he gets on base, he really makes pitchers work. It's also that he can make you pay for a mistake or a really bad location.
There's a piece that I did up at baseballamerica.com where we're trying to find like, okay, let's find the weakness in Kevin McGonagall's game as a hitter. And really the answer was that there isn't one. Like what Jeff said, like I cannot find another hitter in the minor leagues in the last 5 years who had his combination of both aggressiveness in the zone and discipline to not chase out of it. The ability to make exceptional contact rates, especially on pitches in the zone, with this kind of power, with this kind of ability to also hit the ball, you know, again, productively, not just hit it on the ground, pull the ball in the air, you know, really do damage when he gets a pitch to hit. All those things. Then you take it like, let's go further. Let's say, okay, well, he's a left-handed hitter. How's he do against lefties? He really hits lefties. He has always hit lefties. Then you say, okay, well, let's look at the zone. Is there a spot in the zone that he's really weak? Okay, well, you could say a little bit that if you are middle away from him, he doesn't hit it as well. He's still good, but doesn't hit it as well as he does pretty much anywhere else. By the way, if you try to come in on him, Kevin McGonagall has utterly destroyed pitchers time and time again. You say, well, what about velocity? Well, we've looked at velocity, and he hits very well against premium velocity. You could say that there's a little bit more of a weakness against breaking balls, like you could say with most hitters. If you can locate a really quality slider in the zone, maybe you can get Kevin McGonagall out. But doing that three times, four times in a row is going to be really difficult. And that's just what kind of stands out about him. But okay, so we know as a hitter, he's as good as they come in the minor leagues. Now, Jeff, the other question is, he's not that far away from the big leagues. Where is he going to play defensively, do you think?
Yeah, and it's an interesting question because I don't feel outside of Gleyber Torres at second base for 2026 that they're really set in the infield at the second base, shortstop, or third base position. He could kind of fit into any of those. So I would argue that it's wherever is best available, whoever emerges from this group. And there are some players in this infield mix, guys like Colt Keith, who are known more for the bat than the defensive ability. While Kevin McGonagall isn't, you know, going to be a plus shortstop, I think he could probably play a fringe average to average shortstop in the major leagues and probably an average to maybe above average third base and maybe an above average to plus second base. So I think that there is an equation for him at second, short, or third base where it's potentially an upgrade for the Tigers, depending upon how sort of McKinstry, Gleyber Torres, and some of the other, you know, Colt Keith and some of the other options that are there in the Tigers infield, you know, sort of shake out. So I think there's even a reality where he, you know, plays really well defensively at third base or at shortstop and maybe even kind of forces the Tigers' hand a little bit because this is going to be his PPI year for them.
I will say, if you said, where is he going to play best? Every scout I talked to, basically, even the ones who think he can play shortstop, and when I say can, you can play shortstop, and we've seen this with the Tigers in recent years at times. You can play shortstop and not be at the level that you really want your shortstop to be defensively. I do think that we've seen with McGonagall, there are some limitations with his arm, little bit with his range at shortstop, but those scouts are all like, hey, his best position probably, and it's kind of blocked this year with Gleyber Torres, but second base is a position that he could be well above average. He could be a plus defender at second base, not as much demands on his arm, you know, his range, again, second base, you get a little bit more time to the ball gets to you. Hands are good. Instincts are good. All those other aspects of the game are good where he could really fit there. But again, it's something where, yes, could he play third base? Absolutely. Could he play shortstop if you're willing to trade some of that defense for offensive impact? Absolutely. This is where he's going to be a little bit of a Swiss Army knife, we think, this year for the Tigers because, yeah, as you said, Jeff, there's not exactly a lineup here where you say, well, clearly you can't play there or there or there. Although I would say second base right now, if Gleyber Torres is healthy, is probably the position that's most blocked. But yeah, you just mentioned this is his PPI year. When we talk about a hitter like this, this is a guy who doesn't have a whole lot of AA time, has no AAA time yet, played against Connor Griffin in the Eastern League playoffs in one of the great playoff series you'll ever see. Jeff, you were there for that. But we do feel like that this is a very clear 2026 ETA. It seems like the question's really more of just, will it be opening day or will it be a little bit into the season? Much more it is whether he will reach the big leagues in 2026.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's certainly something with the Tigers that's got to be in the equation when you're talking about a prospect of this caliber who, you know, even if he doesn't win Rookie of the Year this year, probably would be in the mix. And even more so, 2 to 3 years down the road, you know, could be a finalist or potentially win an award, you know, an MVP even. I mean, we think he's that quality of hitter. So I think it's something that's in the equation. It wouldn't shock me if maybe he gets a few weeks of AAA time, because with WBC, with all the things that are going on in this particular spring training, I think a lot of these top prospects that get invites to camp are probably going to see a substantial amount of major league time and then be running with the AAA guys on the backfields on the days that they're not playing in the major league games. So they're going to get some of that experience, even if it's not technical games. And he has the kind of quality hit tool that, you know, with the auto, the challenge system and that zone, I really struggle to think that he's going to struggle himself, frankly.
This is a very polished bat. This is a player who should be one of the better rookies in the American League or in Major League Baseball, let's just say, in 2026. Detroit Tigers number one prospect, Kevin McGonigal, the latest of our prospect profiles. If you enjoyed this prospect profile, do head over to Baseball America's YouTube channel, because we are rolling out a prospect profile every day. We're going to cover our number one prospect for each and every organization, all 30 orgs. And we'll do that all through spring training so that you can get caught up on every team's top prospect of our Baseball America prospect profiles. So long, everybody.
We're back. Baseball America prospect profile, Jacob Rudner, JJ Cooper. And we're releasing one of these every single day during spring training, breaking down the number one prospect in each MLB organization. Now, JJ, we're talking about the hometown hero, Carter Jensen, with the Kansas City Royals. Kansas City native, grew up attending Royals games, and now he is the Royals' number one prospect. He played for their scout team and is an interesting left-handed hitting catcher. What stands out to you about Mr. Carter Jensen?
I've been doing the Royals prospect list on and off for more years than I would like to admit. And one of the things I do remember, like when we talk about Big Blue Wave and the group that kind of led them to the World Series back-to-back years and a World Series title, that was a time where the Royals talked a lot about wanting to basically make sure that they also kind of dominated their area. And Carter Jensen is kind of harkens back to that. We have few prospects who did more to raise their stock in 2025 than Jensen did. He was not in the top 100 when the 2025 season began. He enters 2026 as one of the top prospects in the game, you know, knocking right on the door of the top 10. And you look at what he did in 2025 and you kind of go, yeah, well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Jensen had a truly breakout season, played in the futures game, showed power, showed improved hitting ability to go with it. And this is a guy who, a lot of times when we talk about the top catching prospects in the game, you always kind of follow it up with that question of, well, can this guy catch? And you go, well, he can, but we'll see if that's kind of the best fit for him long-term. Carter Jensen can catch. There's not really a question about that. Obviously, the Royals have Salvador Perez. This is, it feels like the Salvador Perez has kind of ushered the catcher of the future on to, you know, to different paths over and over there. You know, MJ Melendez, obviously Fermin, who was traded to the Padres. Carter Jensen does look like we finally have a catcher here who is going to be the guy who job shares and eventually becomes the Royals' everyday catcher. I would expect that you will see him and Perez both get some time at DH this year to keep both of their bats in the lineup. But at the same time, this will help keep Perez fresh and keep Jensen fresh. But I would expect that when you look at the 2026 AL Rookie of the Year race, Jensen is a name that you should absolutely kind of put into it, especially coming off of it's September, but you don't want to go overboard on it, but you also don't want to discount the fact that Jensen came up to the major leagues at the end of last year, very much looked comfortable at the plate, very much looked comfortable behind the plate, and looks like a guy who's really ready to roll from opening day and should be kind of a fixture for this Royals team. And by the way, to have a catcher, like we've seen this with the Royals with Salvador Perez, to have a catcher who can hit the middle of your lineup is really gives you an advantage over a whole lot of other teams. In the case of Jensen, you've got that, you know, to go with Perez. That is going to give him all-around value. This is not a glove who can't hit. This is a guy who can hit in the middle of the lineup, provide real power, and on top of that, give you solid defense as well.
I think a lot of the time when we talk about players that have clearly plus power, which Jensen does, we have questions about the hit tool. How much is he going to be able to get to that power in games? And Jensen is unique in that respect. He rarely expands the zone. He punishes mistakes inside the strike zone. And last year had an in-zone contact rate of 87% in AAA. JJ, just how good is the feel to hit on this very powerful prospect?
I would say one of the things that stands out with that I'm really impressed with is he showed last year, like we saw the contact rate improve. But on top of that, a lot of times when you see a left-handed hitting catcher, you're wondering, okay, is he going to be absolutely helpless when you bring a lefty into the game or if the lefty starter? No, he actually got a lot better at that too. This is the very rare catcher, I would say, who has a chance to be an average or even above average hitter to go with above average or even plus power. I don't want to even kind of spend too much time on it because I know I've talked about it on the show, on the podcast and all before, but watching Carter Jensen at the Futures game and watching the easy power that he showed really did stand out. But watching him in games last season, I would say the contact ability, his ability to hit in addition to get to that power probably stood out even more because I would say that that's, you know, often what trips up young prospects, and especially young catching prospects, is how much can you hit? Carter Jensen is definitely a better hitter than most catching prospects who are, you know, at the point where they are big league ready.
Now, JJ, anybody who follows your baseball coverage knows that catching defense is one of your main things. And I'm curious, just how good of a defender is Carter Jensen? What is the receiving and the blocking like? We know that he has a great throwing arm, but just what is the operation with Jensen behind the plate?
The arm is the strongest tool. The arm is really plus, you could even argue maybe double plus, and that will stand out. We saw it on the video there. You saw a highlight of him throwing. As a receiver, as a framer, I think he's fine. He's average, right? Now, one of the things I'll also say with that that's been interesting to watch in baseball over the last 10, 15 years is the gulf between good framers and bad framers that used to be, if it was here, it keeps getting closer and closer because it is something that you can absolutely train, that you can work on. And the difference has kind of gotten a little bit less. We've seen this in case actually of Salvador Perez, who was a poor framer for much of his career and then lately has gotten better. I don't think that Jensen is going to be a liability back there. I think he'll be solid. I don't think that you're going to expect to see gold gloves down the road, but you don't need to have gold gloves if you can be a solid defender who also provides the average and power that Carter Jensen should be able to provide.
You put together our Royals list. How clear was it that Jensen was the top prospect in the system?
Bill Mitchell puts it together, but I help him with it. And I would say that it was pretty clear this year. This is a Royals list that has improved. Like obviously Jack Caglione does not qualify anymore, but you look at kind of some of the young pitching that they have coming up, Kendry Churio being one that really kind of jumps out. They have another catcher in Blake Mitchell who, you know, has been hurt a lot, but we'll see kind of what he looks like in 2026. But I would say that it wasn't really much of a question that Jensen was the number one prospect in this organization. Once we kind of dove in on it, really did kind of stand out that, like, when you look at him, I would say that really there wasn't much of a difference. There was no one who had more of a difference from where they ranked kind of coming out of last season to where they came into this 2026 season than Jensen, because every bit that we kept working on it, we kept kind of getting more and more positive feedback that, no, this is absolutely a player to watch. When you look at the data on him as well, all these kind of aspects, all the little ingredients that come into how we put together these rankings, all of them kept saying, push Jensen up, push Jensen up. I will also say with this, because I think this is a question that people will ask, is, hey, okay, so we got the challenge system coming in. Do you remember, Jensen's already got experience with that, because we've seen that challenge system in AAA already. I will say that with framing, I don't think it's going to make a big difference, because you're only talking a few pitches a game. But at the same time, it is something that Jensen will have actually more experience coming in than, say, someone like Salvador Perez, because if you have AAA experience, you've already experienced the ABS challenge system.
Well, if you like these, we're going to have a lot more of them. For more prospect profiles, check out the Baseball America YouTube page, where we're releasing one of these every day during spring training. Also, if you want to hear more about prospects, don't miss the next episode of the Hot Sheet Show on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern time. For JJ Cooper, I'm Jacob Rudner. We'll see you next time.
We are back with another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles, where we are looking at the number one prospect in each and every organization. And today, we are looking at Minnesota Twins' number one prospect, Walker Jenkins, the high school outfielder who was the debate back and forth a couple of years ago was, is it Walker Jenkins or Max Clark, who's the best high school outfielder in the very loaded draft class? And here we are, it's 2026, and we still don't have an answer to that. And I mean that in a good way, because both of these guys are elite top 10 prospects in the game. But Jeff, when it comes to Walker Jenkins, I think that our wish is a pretty simple one for 2026. We love prospects. We want to see them succeed. And with Walker Jenkins, the most important thing is please, I want to be in June and I not have read about a Walker Jenkins foot injury that has kept him off the field for a month or 2 months at a time, because injuries have been the biggest hurdle so far, I feel like, for Walker Jenkins.
Yeah, and it's funny because it feels like he's actually played more games than we even realize sometimes. Did play 82 games in 2024, 84 games last year. But still, we haven't seen him on the field consistently enough. We've seen him, dealing with, nicks and bruises and scrapes and breaks and everything else since he's come in, into professional baseball. That said, the underlying characteristics with Jenkins are still something I really buy into. I think that some of the underlying EVs and power numbers that we've put out there, they're not eye-popping, but you look at the swing, you look at the athlete, you look at the size of him, and you think that it's probably going to come at some point, that, the levee's going to break and we're going to see the big EVs, we're going to see the power numbers break through. He's such an incredible hitter, excellent bat to ball skills. He's been one of the youngest players at every level that he's played at over the last couple of years. Really strong approach as well. He's a guy that's going to get on base. He's going to hit for a high average. He's going to put the ball in play. I think he probably has a chance of playing some center field. Maybe he won't with that lineup, but there's a chance, I think. If he moves to right field, he's going to be one of the better right fielders in the game. I think he runs better than people realize. The angles are much better than people realize. It's just a matter of him hitting the ball a little bit harder and seeing some of that power that we know is kind of bubbling underneath the surface, come to fruition and finally have that projection sort of hit. He's an excellent hitter. There's no questions on the hit tool at all. The question is, can he get to that power consistently and become that franchise middle of the order bat that I think a lot of scouts, a lot of evaluators within the game see, and sort of how we see his upside being if he hits that, 80th sort of percentile outcome. There's definitely more star upside here than there is with some of the other hitters at the top of the top 100 even.
And he, as you mentioned, despite the injuries, despite kind of a cascade of foot injuries, mainly, lower leg injuries that have kind of slowed him down, that have cost him time, he reached AAA last year. This is a guy who is going to play the entirety of the 2026 season as a 21-year-old. And I would expect that we will see him in the majors at some point in 2026 as a 21-year-old. 21-year-olds who reach the majors, it's not a guarantee of stardom, but I will tell you this, it is a perfect recipe for stardom. The guys who are capable of playing in the major leagues as 21-year-olds are often the guys who end up having the Hall of Fame or the multiple all-star type careers, because they're reaching the majors at a time when most guys are still hoping to hear their name called in the draft. I mean, this is the same age as many of the college draft picks that we'll see getting picked in July are going to get their names called. They're going to get picked. Walker Jenkins could be in the big leagues by then. The other part of this that you mentioned, Jeff, is we haven't seen the power yet, but at the same time, I do feel like a lot of the underlying kind of like ingredients for that power are still there. I would much rather see a young guy like this who can really hit and then develop the power than have the power but have questions about whether they can hit. You look at Jenkins' frame, you look at kind of, when he does get into a ball, you look at those kind of things and say, okay, I really do feel like it's there. But, you know, if this did go wrong, like I can't help but think of with a Twins prospect, right? If you said what is kind of a disappointing outcome, I would say that it's probably a better Alex Kirilloff type. I think he's a better prospect, but Kirilloff was a prominent prospect, not this level. But, and then the power just never really, the ability to hit for average and power never came together. I guess you could say that a little bit with Trevor Larnach, who I think is a little bit different profile as well. This should be the Twins' best outfield arrival since Byron Buxton, who's still obviously out there as well. But when you talk about that power and what kind of could develop, it's hit first over power. But are you talking about batting average and on base and slug, or batting average and on base, maybe not slug? Or how do you kind of see it all kind of, if we're talking about Walker Jenkins in 2028, 2029, where do you expect to see him kind of have leveled out at?
Yeah, I think if, you know, all of it comes together and we're talking about, you know, the type of player we think this guy can turn into, I think one of the rare players in the game that could flirt with a 300 batting average, a 400 on base percentage, and a 500 slugging percentage. There's not a lot of guys that can ever do that. He falls into the category where I think he can really be a 60 or even a 70 in the hit tool, the on base percent, you know, category in terms of just being able to draw walks in addition to hitting for contact. That's a big part of on base percentage. Can't just walk all the time. You got to be able to hit as well. And also being able to hit 25 to 30 home runs. I think the upside is there's a 6'3" guy with a very projectable athletic frame. And I think those that maybe are doubters a little bit that have watched it on TV and then see it in person kind of walk away going, okay, yeah, I understand how that could all come together. I think the hit tool is better. I think the power now is a little bit better than what it was from Kirilloff. And I think the swing decisions and angles are better. He's a guy that hits his best struck drives at really steep launch angles. Like it was a 19-degree hard hit launch angle. So that's on balls 95 plus that were put in play last year. When he does make hard contact, he hits it at great angles. He knows how to pull the ball hard in the air. It's just a matter of doing that more consistently. And I think when you look at his swing decisions, you look at his bat to ball skills, there's enough plate approach and I think a clean enough left-handed swing there that if you make a couple of tweaks to maybe get to more consistent power, it's not a whole ton of mechanical changes that you're talking about here. It might just be attacking on certain pitches and maybe staying away from certain other pitches off the plate, et cetera. I think that there is a roadmap here to get there, and it's only going to take a little bit of development. And honestly, him just kind of catching up to the competition age-wise and being fully healthy. We get 120 games or more out of Walker Jenkins this year. It wouldn't shock me if we're talking about his first full 20 home run season as a professional.
And the thing I just want to point out here as we kind of wrap this up is this is a guy who the Twins organization, what you look, as you climb the ladder, not a lot of hitter-friendly parts, right? Okay, Texas League with Wichita, I will say, but Fort Myers in the Florida State League, that is a graveyard of a league to hit in. Then you go to the Midwest League, that is not a fun place to hit. Those are kind of suppresses offensive numbers. So only when you get to AA and AAA, which he's only gotten to AAA very little bit. But we're talking about someone who's been one of the youngest players in every league that ever played in, and he's a career 295, 399, 464 hitter right now. And we kind of just laid out that we think that there's more to be had than that. But I'll tell you right now, that right there would make him one of the better outfielders in the major leagues if he just kind of produces that level. And you could say, okay, that's the minors. But as we just said, that's him doing it as 18, 19, and 20-year-olds against guys who are 22, 23, 24, 25. I do think that this is a guy to really keep an eye on what could really still develop here. That's Walker Jenkins, our number one prospect, the Minnesota Twins system, and another of our Baseball America prospect profiles. If you enjoyed this, please do check out the Baseball America YouTube channel. We have on there, we're rolling out 30 of these, one for every team, one a day during spring training. So we're going to keep you fully stocked with all the prospect news you need. And also make sure that you check out The Hot Sheet Show every Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, where we will continue to talk about stuff just like this. Thanks for joining us.